Hello, and welcome to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show, prescribing hope for healthy families here on American Family Radio. Here's your host, Professor, Pediatric Nurse Practitioner, and Mom of Four, Dr. Jessica Peck.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome to a very special show. We have a fantastic guest for you today who, for many of you, will need no introduction. But for those of you who do need an introduction, we have none other than the Dr. George Barna. He is a professor at Arizona Christian University and director of research at the Cultural Research Center at Arizona Christian University, of course, focusing on worldview assessment and development and cultural transformation. He is also the senior research fellow at Family Research Council's Center for Biblical Worldview. And today we're talking about his book, his 60th book, Raising Spiritual Champions, Nurturing Your Child's Heart, Mind, and Soul. He is a New York Times bestseller. He has been married to his wife, Nancy, with three adopted daughters, three grandchildren. Dr. Barna, welcome to the show. We're so grateful to have your time and expertise.
Well, thanks for having me, Jessica. I appreciate it.
Well, we have to get something straight, George, before we get started, because we share so many shared views on our worldview, shared beliefs on our worldview, but there is a really important thing upon which we disagree, and I feel like we have to get that settled first, because I read in your bio that you are a Yankees fan. Is that true?
Here we go. Yes, ma'am. I'm born in Manhattan, okay? When you're born in Manhattan, you've got no choice. Yeah.
So. Well, I was born in Houston, and so that gives me no choice. I know. And you, your team just walloped us at the beginning of this season, so I'm just making sure that that's not going to be an issue. Wanted to give you full disclosure going forward. Are you still okay to have this conversation?
I appreciate it, and since we swept that series, I'm good with it. We can keep going. We'll see what happens. I think, actually, Houston's going to New York next week, so we'll see what happens in the next set of games. But
we'll see what happens. Yeah. It'll be good for my prayer life, right? Okay, I just wanted to make sure that I had full disclosure and transparency between
Thank
us.
You for
but
checking.
But you know, really, what we're talking about today is children's worldview, and the world is bigger than baseball. I'm saying that for my husband's benefit, but really, this is such a good topic, Dr. Barna. And so, I would love for just start with some basics. How do you define a biblical worldview? That is a term that is tossed around a lot, and there are a lot of people who feel really confident, I'm sure, that they could define that, and there are other people that think, yeah, I kind of know what that is. How do you define it?
Yeah, it's a great question, because everybody has one, and my research at least shows that most people really can't put their arms around it. They know it's in there somewhere, but they're not quite sure what it is. And the way that I think about it is it's the decision-making filter that every person has. You make hundreds, maybe thousands of decisions every single day, and they have to be based on something. And that something is your worldview. It's comprised of all of the ideas, the emotions, and the experiences that you've had, the things you've been taught, the things you've heard that you believe. It's essentially your core beliefs that then get translated into a lifestyle, because the best way to find out what somebody really believes is to watch what they do. The core understanding there is you do what you believe. And so if you believe something, your actions are going to be consistent with those beliefs. Otherwise, you'd always feel uncomfortable. You'd have a cognitive dissonance stirring within you that makes life very unpalatable. So your worldview is essentially your intellectual, emotional, and spiritual filter that helps you make every decision you make.
Well, you know, in prior generations, George, the parents really passed this on, and children accepted this pretty much without question. And from my view, you know, as a healthcare professional, I think that social media and just media in general have really transformed the landscape of parenting, because when we were growing up in earlier generations, the world looked like our community. And now we're seeing kids get all of the world's bad news delivered to them instantly at the speed of a smartphone. And then the algorithm feeds their worldview. So if they look at one video of something happening in another part of the world, the algorithm's going to feed them another video and another video until all of a sudden it seems like, oh, this is the way that the world is. So whose worldview are they accepting, and what can we as parents do about that?
Yeah, you've just kind of opened up a can of worms here.
I did, I know.
Talk about, yeah, congratulations. So let me make a couple of comments based on the research we've been doing on this very thing. First of all, biblically, of course, parents have the primary responsibility for raising their children. And that includes their worldview, it includes their spiritual direction and development. But my research over the last 15 or 20 years consistently has shown that the biggest influence on the worldview of children are the arts and entertainment media. And that, in fact, if you were to add up and try to assess what influence all the different influence entities have on our children's worldview, what I've found, at least, is that arts and entertainment has more influence than everything else combined. And so that needs to be a wake-up call to every parent, that you've got to manage the media of your children, because right now it is raising them. You aren't. You can take back that mantle. You can fulfill that responsibility, but you've got to be very intentional and very strategic about it. What's going to make that difficult is that we also found in my research that most children under the age of 13 in America today do not trust their parents anymore. And the reason for that, we dove deeper into that with the children we were interviewing to try to find out why. And they said, oh, it's very simple. My parents say one thing and do another. And we went back to the kids and said, well, what? They're your parents. Why does that matter to you? And in essence, what they told us was, look, I'm trying to figure out who I am, who I'm going to be, what kind of life I want to live, how I want to be represented in the world, all these big questions. And I look at my parents, they say one thing and do another, and that tells me that they're just as confused as I am. And so this brings us back, Jessica, to the arts and entertainment media, because our kids are being exposed hour after hour after hour every day to media messages that within the media context are consistent. You watch a 30-minute television program, a 90-minute movie, you listen to a 3-minute song, and you're getting a consistent worldview message. It's much more difficult to do that when you're a parent who's on parade in front of your kids 24/7. It's a tough thing to do, but we really have to get our act together as parents and make sure that we know what we believe and that we're living according to those beliefs.
I could not agree with you more. And when we look at, depending on what statistics you look at, we know that kids are spending an average of about 9 hours a day consuming some sort of media. But the thing that I think is not talked about enough is that adults are close behind with about 5 hours per day. And when we're looking at media that our kids are consuming, what I see is that parents, and I'm speaking to myself, we tend to use media as a babysitter so that we can do other things, or we even use it as a surrogate for relationship. We just want our kids to not bother us too much. We don't want to be bothered by things that we don't want to be bothered by. And that's such an uncomfortable thing to say, because no parent would say, oh, I'm intentionally doing that, but we're exhausted from living at the speed of a smartphone, and that is our default if we're not intentional about doing something else. And I recently watched the documentary about the abuses alleged at Nickelodeon, which, of course, you know, basically what they said in the allegations were that adults were writing entertainment content for children, and they were inserting adult innuendo and even not innuendo, pretty much straight out explicit things. things that were guised as humor and that would go over the heads of children for their own perverse entertainment. And it really struck me, George, that people, parents are not watching media with their children. And if they did, they would see this, they would guide it, but children are just left to interpret it for themselves. And in your book, you talk about some of the popular television content. What, tell us about today's most popular kids shows. What kinds of things are kids consuming?
Well, in essence, what we found is we did a big content analysis study of the most popular children's programming, is that the biblical worldview, that is, understanding the world through God's eyes and responding to that world in ways that honor him and respect his principles as delivered to us in the Bible, what we found is that that biblical worldview was virtually nowhere present in the most popular children's programs. What we did find were, you know, large doses of worldviews like secular humanism, postmodernism, Marxism, some nihilism was in there. Eastern mysticism is very largely represented, you know, kind of a pantheistic worldview where there are many gods and, you know, it's just a whole different way of understanding how life works. You get reincarnated at the end of your life. All of that is bred into programs that we analyzed from Disney and Nickelodeon and, you know, many other different children's programs and networks. So parents, you know, in the book I talk about how parents really have to take the time to know what their children want to watch, to make the decision for them about whether or not they can watch it, to minimize how much programming or media of any kind they're being exposed to, mortalizing that media for them, meaning helping them to discover what's right and what's wrong that's being shown or being broadcast to the children through those media. And then finally, model that in your own media usage. One critical thing we found about parents is that they lose their kids because of bad role modeling. And so we've got to show the kids a lifestyle that's attractive, that's consistent, that's biblical, and that they then can pattern their own lives after. But we're not going to be able to do that if our own lives are inconsistent with what we are telling our children to do.
It's so true, because the answer is not in being the media police and policing everything. It's about providing a compelling alternative and have it building relationship through those discussions about media where you're talking out decision making and saying, what do you think about this? What worldview do you see presented here? And how does that relate to our faith and our beliefs? But it takes time and it's difficult to do. And one of the things I appreciated that you shared in the book was your own experience with your own children who actually had some criticism for you about critiquing media. And so it's, you know, it's very gratifying to know that George Barna is not, he doesn't impress his children, right? You know, because to them, you're just dad. Can you share a little bit about that and what you learned from it?
I don't impress them. I don't impress my wife. I don't impress myself. I mean, I'm not a very impressive guy, okay? But
yeah, well, you are a Yankees fan. I mean, sorry, I did.
They're impressive, okay?
It's true.
Yeah. I mean, the reality was that we encouraged our kids to have their friends over to our house because we wanted to be involved in those relationships, monitor what was going on, and know that our children were not going off in the wrong direction. And one of the ways that that happened was, you know, we installed a movie room. Our kids would watch movies here with their friends. But we would watch the movies with them, and then afterwards we'd talk with the kids about, or sometimes we'd stop the movie when something particularly troublesome happened, and we'd say, whoa, let's talk about that for a minute. What's going on there? And after a while, our kids said, you know what, we can't invite our friends here anymore. Nobody wants to watch a movie with you in the room. Nobody wants to have these conversations afterwards. We're trying to have fun, Dad. And I said, yeah, you know, girls, I want you to have fun. And you know, I'm doing the best I can to let you do that. But I understand that I'm responsible for what you bring into your mind and your heart and your soul as truth. And when you see lies, when you're exposed to bad teaching, I simply want to point it out so that you don't go down the wrong path in life.
And that takes backbone. And that's what I want to talk to you about when we come back from this break, is about the backbone that is needed and the peer pressure that parents are facing these days and constantly second guessing their decisions because their kids are convincing them they're ruining their lives. And I also have a few questions about video games. So stay tuned. We'll be right back with Dr. George Barna, and we'll see you on the other side of this break. Why is our society so ravenous to abort babies? According to a former Satanist, the demonic forces have a bloodlust for the innocents and sickly believe their blood sacrifice empowers evil. Make no mistake, we are fighting a spiritual battle as we protect the most innocent among us, babies in their mother's womb. Preborn stands on the front lines of this battle, and their network of clinics are positioned in the highest abortion areas, often next to abortion mills where unspeakable evil takes place every day. Preborn offers God's love and life to protect hurting women and precious preborn babies. And every time a baby is saved, which happens 200 times a day, good conquers evil. Please make your most generous gift to empower good and rescue precious souls. For just $28, you can sponsor an ultrasound that doubles a baby's chance at life. To donate securely, dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250 baby, or go to preborn.com. That's preborn.com.
You're listening to the Dr. Nurse Mama Show with Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Welcome, friends. We are talking with the Dr. George Barna, professor at Arizona Christian University and director of research at the Cultural Research Center at Arizona Christian University. We're talking about his book today, his 60th book, Raising Spiritual Champions, Nurturing Your Child's Heart, Mind, and Soul. And don't we all, as parents who are listening to this program, want to do that? That is our heart's cry. And that echoes so much what I believe as a nurse practitioner in holistic care and how we are body, mind, and soul. And all of those planes impact our health. And before the break, Dr. Barna and I were engaged in a really exciting conversation about how media is influencing our kids. And he issued a pretty bold call to action that we have got to act as parents. We must not be complacent and just kind of think, well, let's just see what happens and hopefully it'll all turn out okay. That is not okay. And Dr. Barna, we talked a little bit about some of the popular children's TV programs, but you speak in the book, and actually I had a guest on the show last week where we talked specifically about video games. And I do not see that in the public narrative as much, but you have some warnings there.
Well, when we look at how children spend their time with media, one of the fastest growing categories is video games. And then when you start looking at the video game content itself, what you discover is even though they may have some kind of rating on the package, it's really not a very effective or even a very accurate assessment of what kind of content you're going to find in that game. And, of course, motivating video games based upon worldview. You know, does this comport with the truths in Scripture? Does this advance the principles that God's given to us for life? Or does it reject them and advance a whole different way of living? Most video games reject biblical principles based on the violence, the sex, the language, the types of relationships, the uses of money, the importance of fame, how one's reputation gets built. I mean, you look at all of these things that ultimately determine who you are as a person and how you're represented in society. And video games are leading our kids astray in many ways. So it's one of those areas where I recommend that parents, before they allow their kids to start using the game for hours and hours every week, that they actually get on there and play it and think through, is this something that I'd be willing to sit next to Jesus and play with him? and say, hey, Lord, isn't this fun? Isn't this great? Isn't this the kind of life you want us to lead? Isn't this teaching the kind of principles that you think my children should be gleaning from this? And if you can't say, yeah, that, I think Jesus would be proud of this, then you ought to rethink turning your child loose with that game.
I could not agree more. And you point out in your book, and I affirm, the American Academy of Pediatrics recommends that children do not play violent video games. And you make a note, which is true, about the absence of commentary on some of the moral things that are in there, some of the sexual nature of some of those things and other gratuitous forms of just really things that are not good that kids should not be seeing. But your most important point here is that parents need to play the game with their kids. I think this is true for any form of media. If you're thinking about allowing your teenager to have a social media account, you need to use that platform. Because you know what I think about, George, is when we teach our kids to drive, we know how to drive. And we know how to tell them how to look, you know, be a defensive driver and what to look out for and how to look, make sure that they're being safe. But we have never used a lot of these media. We have never seen them. So we can't even anticipate what is coming up. So how do we guide them when we don't even know what's coming? What threats are possible on social media or TV shows that they're watching or streaming shows or video games? All of those things are true. And what I talked about before the break is that I see a lot of parents in my practice who are really tortured about this decision-making because they may decide, you know what, we're not going to have that game in our house, or we're not going to watch that show in our house. We're going to adopt these media standards. And their kids act like it's the end of the world. You have just destroyed my social life. You are overreacting. This is not that big of a deal. And then parents start to question themselves. And you talk about backbone being required. I would love for you to give a word of affirmation, encouragement to those parents who are holding the line, but not feeling too confident about it.
You know, parenting is not for the faint of heart. We in America, I think, have developed this idea that, well, you know, we just pop a few kids out and, you know, they hang around the house with us for 18 years and everything's fine. No, no, no. I mean, you know, the children that we're allowed to have are a gift from God, and they come with a deep responsibility that we have in terms of how they're going to be raised. And so you're exactly right, Jessica. I mean, there's so much negative peer pressure on parents who are trying to raise their children to be Christ-like. And some of those parents buckle under it. And, you know, like I mentioned, I'm from Manhattan, and, you know, in New York we have an expression, hey, you don't have to like it, just deal with it. And that's kind of the way, that's kind of the way it is with the peer pressure that you're going to receive from your friends, from your associates. And so in this case, I'd say, yeah, it's important that even if you're shunned by your peers, keep this in mind. Who are you raising the children for? You are not raising them for society. You are not raising them for your friends' approval. You're not raising them for Harvard University admission. You're raising them for the God of the universe who loves that child more than you ever will and has gone as far as to trust you to raise that loved, beloved child. And that's a huge responsibility. Take it seriously. Talk about how that is the single most important responsibility you have in life. It's not about the size of your house, the type of car, anything else. It's about what are you doing with these children and knowing that by the age of 13, their worldview is fully developed. And so in particular for those first 12 years that you have that child, even if you have to pass up promotions, even if you have to live in a smaller house, you're going to make sacrifices your whole life for your kids. So get used to that from the very beginning. Recognize that the sacrifices that you make are sacrifices you're making for the love of God, out of your respect for His Word, out of your determination to raise a child that will grow up to know, love, and serve God with all their heart, mind, strength, and soul, which is what you as a parent need to be doing. That's the model you need to be setting for your kids. So if your neighbors don't like what you're doing, tough beans. I mean, you know, they're going to answer to God for what they choose to do with their children. And I'm betting that in many cases more than not, they're going to watch what happens with your children when you raise them in a godly manner, and they're going to be impressed. They may not tell you that, but there may even be some changes in how they parent their children as a result of your good work.
Well, you have just taken us to church. That was a great sermon and such a good word of encouragement. And I can't agree more. It requires intentionality, because the truth is that parenting is easy. Parenting well is really, really hard. And we can say that we prioritize our children, but if you look at your calendar and you look at your credit card, those are the true measures of accountability of where you're spending your most precious resource, that's your time, and your second most precious resource, that's your treasure. If you look and see if your calendar, if your credit card is not reflecting that, you're not doing it. And, you know, George, I feel really strongly that parenting is such a daunting task. It is so overwhelming, and it's easy to be discouraged. We cannot do this alone, and the local church is so important, is a critical partner to help strengthen and reinforce what we're saying at home, and partnering with the local church to nurture a biblical worldview for our children. So can you give us some advice on the local church and the connections that you talk about in your book?
Well, this may sound a little harsh, and I don't mean it to, but don't just go to a church that you like as an adult. That church really isn't there for you. It's there for your children. Why am I saying that it's more important that we look at church through the eyes of the effect it'll have on the kids than what it's going to do for us? Because they're the ones whose life is being developed before the age of 13. Their worldview is going to be shaped by that time. And every place we take them can have an impact on them. So you want to make sure that if you're going to take them to church, a church, that it's a church that teaches the Bible, that supports parents in what they're doing in raising the children. They can only do that if they have constant and consistent communication with you, and if you're all working together toward raising the child to be a spiritual champion. And partly that means also then you've got to be very circumspect about the kind of pastor or the person in charge of that children's ministry that's going to be over your child's life there. What we found is that only 12% of all children's pastors in America have a biblical worldview, and you can't give what you don't have. So what you as a parent who loves Jesus and wants your kids to love and follow Jesus, you've got to find one of those churches that has one of those pastors that's ministering to children because they believe in the Bible, they love God, they're committed to Jesus, and they want your children to be in that same frame of mind and have that same kind of lifestyle. Don't just go someplace where your kids have fun, where they're safe, and where they meet nice friends. That's good. That's a wonderful thing. But that's not the point of why we go to church. We go there to become warriors for the kingdom of God. And again, that may sound kind of harsh, but get over it. You know, another New Yorkism there, sorry. You know, the reality is that every day we're involved in a massive spiritual war. And the truth of the matter is Satan has targeted our children. And it's our job as parents to protect them and to prepare them for that battle when they're on them.
And you know, you don't pull any punches. And I love the New Yorker. It's my husband's family is Italian, so I'm familiar with passionate language with lots of hand languages, hand signals, you know. I love that,
my
hand gesturing.
Yeah, right now. Yeah,
exactly,
yeah,
exactly. Yeah. But yeah. You don't pull any punches here, George. I want to read from this section of your book because you said, exposure to media is the most significant shaper of a person's worldview. And then you go on to say, given the overwhelming persuasive capacity and influence of media vehicles that target children, it is important that parents consciously fill the role of media gatekeeper. And here's where you say it, lay it on the line. The failure to do so gives the media world unrestricted entree to the mind, heart and soul of their child. And it's just like I said earlier, I'm convinced that parenting is easy. Parenting well is really hard. And just like you were talking about, going to plug into a church can be relatively easy, but finding a church where there is a Bible-believing pastor, a pastor with a biblical worldview, I'll tell you, George, actually, when you released those statistics, it made my pastor have tears in his eyes. He was so heartbroken about that. And there are pastors who do want to partner, and they need our encouragement more than anything. Well, George, we're almost out of time here, but I would love to know what you hope parents will get from reading this book, Raising Spiritual Champions, Nurturing Your Child's Heart, Mind, and Soul.
Well, I think first and foremost, I want them to reassess their priorities. Did you have children, you know, just for the fun of it, or do you look at your children as your gift to God? And if that's the case, what are you doing to shape that gift, to prepare that gift, to hone that gift to be something that's magnificent, something that God is going to be so thrilled about by virtue of how those children live? Not what they parrot back when you ask them questions, but how do they choose to live? Because that really shows where your heart is. And so I'm hoping that parents will reevaluate their priorities. They'll have a plan that they're going to follow to raise up spiritual champions, a plan that looks at both substance and product of that substance that's being taught, and that ultimately they're going to be partnering with their children and being warriors for the kingdom. That's what we've got to be doing here in America, not simply playing games of getting ahead by society's measures based on society's rules. That's a losing strategy.
And what are these winning strategies that parents can use to disciple their children?
Well, number one, it's based on a relationship. You have to spend enormous amounts of time with your kids. That relationship has to be based on trust. It's got to be based on you having continual conversations with them about life, Socratic dialogue, where you're not always telling them what to think, telling them that they're wrong, telling them that they're not reading the Bible enough, but you're asking them questions about the choices that they're making, because they're always making choices. And so when you see them make a good choice, when you see them make a bad choice, say, wow, that's interesting. Why'd you choose to do that? Let them explain what was behind it, and then you get to continually ask questions about their answers so that you lead them toward developing a biblical worldview. You don't have to tell them what to believe. They won't believe it anyway, because that's your worldview. They've got to develop one that they are going to own based upon the fact that they've come to that conclusion. You can drive them to those conclusions in a loving, trusting manner. And ultimately, that's what's going to work out best.
Amen and amen. Well, you have been listening to Dr. George Barna talk about his book, Raising Spiritual Champions, Nurturing Your Child's Heart, Mind, and Soul. You can go to raisingspiritualchampionsbook.com to find out more and get your copy. I strongly encourage you to do so. It is an eye-opening read to see data on what is going on with our kids and what we can do about it. And when we come back, Dr. Barna is giving away not one, not two, but three copies of this book, and we will give that number and open the phone lines after this break. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Podcasts of the Dr. Nurse Mama Show are available on the podcast page at AFR.net. Now, back to Dr. Jessica Peck on American Family Radio.
Well, hey, friends, and welcome back. I hope that you heard my conversation with the Dr. George Barna. I have been following his statistics and research for years, and he has just authored his 60 books, and it's called Raising Spiritual Champions, Nurturing Your Child's Heart, Mind, and Soul. And Dr. Barna has graciously offered three copies to give away to our listeners. We'll take the first three callers at 888- 888- 589-8840. That's 888 1-800-589-8840. And if you missed the first two segments and my conversation with him, I hope that you'll go back and listen, because so much wisdom to share and just encouragement as parents today, because there are a lot of parents, maybe like me. I was a parent that when my oldest child became 13, I realized I was doing it all wrong. I had not had a healthy relationship with my parents. My 13-year-old and I were in constant conflict, fighting all the time. And if I'm really honest, at home it was just miserable, because I was miserable. I was failing as a parent, projecting that onto her, and using past skills that I had learned that were just not healthy. They weren't healthy relationship building skills. They weren't healthy coping skills. And I recognized that I was going to need both a new mindset and a new skill set going forward. I knew I was going to need to unlearn and relearn ways of building relationships, just like Dr. Barna was talking about, because we've heard it said, rules without relationship lead to rebellion, and we have to cultivate relationships with our kids. Now, in all of the things that are coming at them in today's culture, they're wanting influence. They're wanting to influence mainly their purchasing powers as consumers. But those influences are not seeking a relationship with our kids. And parents, that's where we have the high ground. That's where we have the upper hand, is that no one is competing with us to build a relationship with our kids with the same motivations that we have. And so I just want to encourage you, if you're thinking, I heard Dr. Barna say their worldview is established by 13, my kids are older than that, and I pretty much just discouraged and feel like I'm doing everything wrong. Let me tell you, friend, there is hope for you. It is never, ever too late to invest in your parenting journey. Even if your children are grown, if your children are grandparents themselves, it is never too late to invest in your relationship with your children. And God made us to have a hole in our heart that longs for relationship with our parents. I can't tell you how many kids I've sat with who have dysfunctional and difficult relationships with their parents, but yet they still want that. There is something that just longs within their soul for them to have that. And one of the best ways for us to build relationships is to be authentic and to model our faith practices. So we have come to week 17 and talking about 52 habits for healthy parenting. And week 17, this habit this week is modeling your faith. Now, we've talked about some specific elements of that, but I wonder if your kids could articulate what your spiritual life is like. If someone asked them, hey, what is your parents' faith like? Could they describe it to them? Could they explain what your faith looks like? How you feel about God, how you feel about going to church, how you pray, how you engage in spiritual disciplines. Kids are remarkably observant, and they're going to do what we do and not what we say. But here is the wonderful mystery in all of this. When you work on nurturing and strengthening your own faith, it heals your own soul. At the same time, it heals the soul of your children. And that is pretty amazing, because if you don't find your own healing journey, then that hurt that you experience, that you refuse to deal with, it will become your children's burden to bear, whether you like it or not. And so I encourage you, if you feel like you're in a struggle of parenting, let me give you some words of advice. This is shared from my book, Behind Closed Doors, A Guide to Help Parents and Teens Navigate Through Life's Toughest Issues. It's never too late to have a restart on your parenting. So let me give you 10 tips for success in the journey and things that will be encouraging to you as you go on. Number one, share openly. We need to share our journey with other parents. As I talked about with Dr. Barna, being a parent is overwhelming, especially in today's world. It is daunting. It is terrifying. It's exciting. It's beautiful. It's wonderful. But it is a big thing. And so We need to share our journey with other parents. I've talked before about five people you need in your village: having an intercessor, having a counselor, having a friend, having someone who's in the same boat as you, and having someone who is just basically wildly unimpressed with you, who knows the real you. Is there one person who knows everything? We need to encourage each other and share openly to break down barriers of stigma and shame. No one's family is perfect, mine included, I assure you. We're learning all the time. Number two, plan creatively. As you're looking at your parenting, every family is wonderfully unique. Your hobbies, your preferences, your personalities vary tremendously. Do something that's right for your family. Don't be afraid to be unique. You don't have to do what all the other families are doing. I talk all the time about the matching Christmas PJ picture. Clearly, my family does not have one of those because I keep talking about it. But it's okay. I'm completely fine with that. We're not that family, and that's all right. What is your family preferences? And having that as an identity is protective for your kids. Number three, commit intentionally. So think about what you want to do and then plan to do it. Put it on your calendar, whatever that is that you are going to do for an investment in your family, whether that's time that you plan to spend, whether you're going to start asking kids to go on a walk with you, cook with you, spend time with you. And listen, don't be discouraged if you start asking your kids, especially if you have teenagers, to spend time with you or do something with you, and they say no, because we do that same thing as parents. If our kids seem kind of distant, they haven't been on their best, and then all of a sudden they're cozying up next to us saying, "Hey, mom, how are you? How was your day?" We think automatically, "What do you want?" And our kids think the same thing. So commit intentionally, and emphasis on commit, and follow through and do it. Number four, give freely. When you decide that you're going to give your child a gift, whether that is trying to ask them to spend time with them or do something that they like or buy them something that you know that they've been wanting to as a gesture of support, or you go to their school event, don't put any strings attached on those gifts. Give them as a free gift, even if you don't get validation, because if we're honest, what we're wanting right then is validation. We want them to give us that feedback loop of immediate gratification saying, "Hey, that was a good intervention. Good job, mom. Good job, dad. I appreciate that." But we have to be confident that planting and harvesting do not happen in the same season. So we'll be patient and wait and let them see with confidence in our eyes that we are confident in the seeds we've planted to be harvested in another season. Number five, listen patiently. Your kids really do want to talk with you. They really do care tremendously what you have to say. I know it doesn't seem that way, but research shows that teens with strong parental connections are far more influenced by their family than their friends. And your best bet is just to commit to conversations, no matter what the response. Maybe you give a lot of time and energy planning something. Maybe you're sitting patiently and talking and they really don't say anything back. That's okay. Even if you just say something, telling them, "You can always tell me anything. I'm here for you." They may not immediately say, "Oh, thank you so much." But they may come back to you later and say, "You know, I've been thinking about what you said, and I have some questions." That is a super rewarding moment. And just remember, parenting is not about the destination. It is a journey to an unknown destination. It's not about where you're going or where your kids will end up or what school they'll end up with or what occupation, although those things are important. But the most important thing is how you choose to lead the conversation along the way. Again, this journey will plant seeds to be harvested in another season. This is not immediate dramatic growth like a chia pet. And if you're watching Share-a-thon, you will see that Wesley Wildman did not know what chia pets are. I'm working on that. So if you've been following that saga, stay tuned. Number six, communicate therapeutically. So let me walk you through a model of communication that I use in clinical practice that I've modified for parents. And this is basically motivational interviewing, but for kids, and it works for any age group. If you can teach yourself these four steps, you will make a lot of progress, I promise. It's love your child, L-O-V-E. The first step, listening with our face. If you don't walk away from here with anything else except to put your phone down, put down whatever is distracting you, whatever screen is distracting you when your children want to talk to you, look them in the eyes and say, I can see this is important. I want you to know you have my full attention. And then give it to them. And listen, don't be thinking about what you're going to say already, but really listen to what they have to say. And when we make eye contact with our kids for 20 seconds or more, it releases oxytocin and dopamine and feel-good chemicals in their brains that make them feel bonded to us. So use that natural, God-given defense that we have right there. O is offer open-ended questions. When we hear things we don't like or with which we disagree or with for things that we think we have a simple answer, then our tendency is to get angry or to lecture or just to push play and go start talking a mile a minute. Resist the urge. Ask open-ended questions instead. Seek their understanding. Gain their trust. Don't ask yes or no or rhetorical questions. Be curious, cultivate curiosity, and just say questions like, how did that make you feel? What do you think you should do? What's the hardest thing about this situation that you're facing? V is validate their feelings. Now, your child might be wrong in their thought process, but their feelings themselves are not wrong. And as a parent, our nonverbal behavior is more meaningful than our words. So don't sigh, fold your arms, tilt your head with a look that says, really, or just walk away. Try to maintain a neutral posture, open hands, open eyes, open heart, and say, I can see this has you feeling really anxious. I can see this has got you down. I can see that you're feeling sad about this. I can see you feel conflicted. And let me tell you what magical connections can happen when you simply see them, when you see their feelings. And we have to remember that Jesus had emotions. He got angry. He got sad. He got tired, he got scared, he got frustrated, and he didn't sin. But emotions are human feelings that need to be named and claimed. And this approach helps you to address behaviors in a way that our child can better receive. Then E is explore next steps together. When issues arise during conversation, decide the next steps together. The more investment they have in this conversation, the more they will engage. Having your child be an active partner in creating an action plan will strengthen your relationship. So if you are talking about media consumption, as Dr. Barna was talking about earlier, ask your kids, how will you make decisions? How do you propose making decisions about putting limits on what our family watches or putting standards on that? That will really help. Now, it doesn't mean you have to accept everything they say, but they may come up with something you didn't think of. Now we've gone through the Love Your Teen model. I'm back on number 7 in my 10 tips for success, playing music. It's so important to cover your home with music that gives words of life, words of encouragement, words that will lift you up, words that tell you messages like you're chosen, not abandoned, that you can stand on the promises of God, your Savior. All of those things are so important. I play music in my house all the time, sometimes honestly, even when I'm not here, because I want God's Spirit to rest. Number 9 is seeking counsel. These issues that you're facing as parents are too heavy to bear alone. So have support for the journey. Is there a friend you can call and safely express your fears or frustration without griping about them publicly on Facebook? I know. Oh, that's so hard. That's called sharenting. Do you have a trusted spiritual leader or counselor to guide you through difficult issues? Who can help bear your burdens? And number 10, this is the single most important thing you can do for your child, is to pray. And if you are adopting one of our 52 healthy habits for parenting, keep a prayer journal to accompany this journey and praise God for prayers answered. Be faithful in the waiting. And when you feel least like praying, pray the most. Pray often, pray boldly, and pray loudly. No fancy words are needed. Pour out your heart before the Lord. He knows, He sees, and He cares. Congratulations to Rebecca and Scott from Mississippi and Amy from Tennessee, who are the winners of our book. May the Lord bless you and keep you, and I'll see you here next time.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.